Mr. Kadriwan, can you tell me how you came to go to Korea in the first place, please?
Well, I just finished two signal courses in East Knee Barracks, and I'd just been promoted to a corporal. So then I was top of the list for a draft, or next to the top. The first corporal went sick, so that was him out the way. Then I was the next one, and I went to Bickley, where they were forming a 41 commando, independent commando. And to form that unit, there were various tradesmen, various people, SBS people, signalmen, engineers, all that sort of crowd. And to form this unit, we had to form up on the parade ground, like so many men here, you are the signal section, so many men here, you are such and such a section. And we'd done that for several days until we got the unit properly organised. Then we flew out BOAC to Hong Kong.
When was this? Which year?
This was 1950, September 1950. When we flew out to Hong Kong, we stopped at Rome, Cairo, Basra, Delhi, Rangoon, overnight stay. And then we went to Hong Kong and we changed to a different aircraft. We had a night stay in Hong Kong, changed to a different aircraft, and we flew to Japan via Okinawa, I believe.
When the Korean War broke out, had you expected to go?
No, it was so quiet, really. You know, I'd only just finished a course in England, and I thought, well, at least I'll be safe for a little while. But unfortunately, I wasn't. But when we got there into Japan, Camp McGill, I think the place was, near Tokyo or that area, Yokohama, we were training with use of American equipment and American arms, American instructors, everything American. And then it sort of was quiet for a couple of months. You know, the Korean dude was not mentioned at all. Well, not from our angle. However, we were training raids on the coast. We were training, and then we actually did raids on the Korean coast.
Can you tell me how you trained for these raids on the coast? What you actually did?
In my group, we went on the USS Perch, which was a submarine with a very big balloon on the back, which contained the various boats, rubber boats that we used. And eventually we did raid the North Korean coast from this submarine in these boats. Eventually we came back to...
What happened on your raid?
We were detailed to blow up various railway lines and things like that. Not my job, but that's what we were there for. I was a signalman, so therefore I was on a wireless set, you know. But that's what we were doing, blowing up various things along the North Korean coast.
So you land at dead of night and go quietly ashore?
We landed, we had, to put it on the record, I suppose you know what it is about this, but what we did, we had a motorboat towing various rubber crafts until it got about a mile from the shore, and then the motorboat cut out and went. And then we paddled in our boats until 200 yards, and then I went over the side of the rubber boats with two or three others, and we swam in, and as the coast was clear, we got all the boats in. That was the sort of thing we did. But of course, when the job was done, we all got out of the way quick, came back to the submarine.
Do you know which month it was that you raided the coast?
I would say October, I should think. Or beginning of November, 1950.
And what exactly did your job entail on the raid?
I had a wireless set. I carried a wireless set. So, my communications.
And who were you communicating with?
To the various people in our group and back to the submarine.
Can you remember the kind of messages that you passed?
Well, there were very little messages. Well, the messages were very, very sparse, I should think. You know, no communication unless an emergency. And amongst ourselves, we just used the old Morse code in the breath, you know. How did he do it? That sort of way, you know, without voice. We didn't pass many messages, naturally. It was so quiet.
So you were really there more for emergency purposes?
That's right, yeah.
And was there an emergency on the road?
One man was shot, but we don't know how that happened or anything like that. I don't, anyway.
Do you know who he was?
He was the youngest Marine in that unit.
Can you remember his name?
I can't remember his name, no.
You mean shot dead?
Yes, shot dead.
By the enemy or by accident?
Well, I don't know. We don't know.
Was his body brought back?
Yes, his body was brought back. As far as I know, his body was brought back.
And how many men were landed on the raid, do you know?
Oh, no, I don't know. We had a unit of about 200 people or thereabouts. Some were raiding from submarine at USS Perch, and some were raiding from American destroyers, the name I can't remember at the moment. So the unit was split up between these two or maybe three boats, you know, different jobs.
And how heavy was the equipment that you had to carry?
The American equipment is a lot lighter than ours. It wasn't very heavy at all as such. So, as I say, when we got near the coast, I was over the side and the equipment was in the rubber boats, and I was swimming with the equipment in the rubber boats and brought it ashore. So there was no weight that way. And even ashore, they were so light, their wireless sets, that there was no problem at all, weight.
What kind of a beach did you land on?
Oh, I don't remember now. I can't remember now.
Could you see anything, or was it pitch black?
It was fairly black, but you get used to the dark and you can see things, you know. But I must remember the water was fluorescent, you know, as you were swimming, so you could see in front of you and that. It's amazing, that is.
How far inland did you penetrate?
Oh, not far. Hundreds of yards, I should think. The railway was almost on the shore, railway lines, you know.
What could you see once you got ashore? Anything at all?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't see a lot, no.
Was it a country area?
Oh, yeah, yes. It wasn't a town or anything, you know, just a country area.
And did you see the explosion?
The explosion was timed to go off after we left. And I believe they did go off. We were back on the submarine by then, and were told about it afterwards, you know.
Do you know whether the operation went smoothly, or were there any...
I believe the operation went smoothly. The only drawback was the one man we lost, or one man killed.
Was that the only raid that you conducted on the coast?
I believe we'd done two of those. So, as I say, it's a long time, and I think we done two, bearing in mind we were training as well. I suppose we were training in parts of Japan, Japanese coast, and then this raid to the Korean came almost soon after. So we may have done two. And then after those raids, we came back into Japan. And then we went up to a camp on the side of Fujiyama. Camp, the name I can't remember. And there we were more or less training again, digging foxholes, as they say, trying to dig foxholes in this lava, this volcanic rock. It's a terrible job. Anyway, that lasted a few, well, probably a week or so. Then the next thing we found, we was at Hamhung on the North Korean coast. And we'd landed. And the Americans were there. And then we'd done, I believe, 1 or 2 days scouting. And then the next thing we went up in convoy to towards towards the Chosan reservoirs. But they were some distance away. The first day we travelled up, we were stopped by various American camps by the roadside, and several scares with mortars, perhaps, I don't know what it was, but ammunition going off. So therefore we had to stop and stop the convoy, and then we had a meal or something, and then we carried on again to a big American dump further up the road. We stopped the night there. The next morning early, all the fighting troops, as we called them, all the actual people who'd done the fighting, went off in the morning to clear the hills along the valley of, they knew then that the Chinese were in fighting us. So the troops went out in the morning with the tanks, clearing the way up the valley. They were clearing the hills, the troops. And then a convoy went out from this American dump. I should think it was about dinner time, 12, 1 o'clock in the day. And then from 3:30 that day, when the Chinese attacked us, to 5:30 the next morning, it was a constant, it was a battle that raged all that time. There was a few lulls in the battle, but it went on all that time. The Chinese mortared a truck in front, and then a truck behind, and then that's the way they carried on. And we had no means of getting rid of these trucks. The tanks had previously gone out and went flying up the road after to relieve the Americans at Chosan Reservoirs. So that left all these headquarter people, which were our signalmen, engineers and all people like that connected with headquarters, plus all the American headquarter people. They were also going up in the same convoy. We'd done...
So this was an ambush by the Chinese?
It was a kind of ambush, yes, I would say it was an ambush.
Whereabouts was this?
This is... I believe it's a place called Coterie, or a word like that. I'm not sure of the actual name of the place.
And do you know the dates approximately?
The 29th of November, 1950.
What happened next?
Well, as I say, there was fighting going on all night, and the American arms weren't all that good. The carbines were freezing up, and various M1s were no good, this and that. However, 5:30 the next morning, there was a lull, and the next thing we saw were Chinese all over us. And they said that the group had been surrendered in the morning, and we knew nothing about that, the Marines anyway. So naturally, nothing else we could do but surrender.
You mean the Chinese were suddenly all amongst you?
All amongst us, yes. And we were told that the person in charge of our group, an American, had surrendered us. So we couldn't do anything about that.
Could I just stop you there and ask you one or two questions? How had you landed originally at Hamhung?
Oh, by ship, as a normal entry into a port.
By Royal Navy?
Not
Navy
a
raid,
no, I don't think it was I think it was an American ship.
And you were talking about the problems with the equipment because of the cold.
Yeah.
Did you find that was general with all your equipment, that it wasn't able to cope with the severe conditions?
Most of the arms were freezing up. It was very cold. The ammunition we had, we carried, we'd used, and we could not get any more from the vehicles because of this mortaring and vehicles on fire, sniping and all that sort of thing. So we were using what we could, but we found that the American weapons were freezing up. The American rifles and carbines, as they call them.
What about the lorries? Were they freezing up as well?
Well, most quite a few of the lorries were on fire, so that was... You couldn't do nothing with them, you know.
And how was your wireless equipment working?
Well, at that time, I became, or I landed in North Korea, I then became the telephones. I was a line corporal for the line, for the telephone lines, and it's the idea being that when we'd stopped from any action, my job was to run out telephone cables to the various departments. So I had no job to do on that convoy, just a passenger. And the actual people who were doing the wireless communications were Americans. They were American Marine Division, which one I can't remember now. They were in communication, took over the communication of the convoy for that actual convoy.
Was there any American Air Force overhead?
They called a raid, and they dropped napalm on one area to flush the Chinese out of one area, I know. I think, but of course when it became dark, that ceased. So I think perhaps they did do a couple of bombing runs, American Air Force.
Did you think that napalm raid worked?
Well, it was new to us. I mean, all we could see were people running about on fire. And that was quite a few, half a mile away perhaps. And that was the first time I ever come across that.
So these were Chinese troops?
Chinese troops.
Could you hear them shouting?
Oh, no.
It's often said about this push north by the Americans that it was done without due care, that it was done too fast. Did you feel that yourself?
Well, we didn't know anything about that at the time. we didn't know where the Americans were or anything like that. All we had to do, we had a particular job of helping the Americans get back from this chosen reservoir. So we did not know anything about whether they cleared either side of the road or this and that or anything like that.
So you were a relieving column in a way?
Yes, we were a relieving column.
Who else was in the column apart from your unit, do you know?
There was, I suppose, the relieving column was some of the American Marines, which part of the American Marine Division. But that I do not know. I can't remember what the number was. Only headquarters staff, not actual fighting troops.
What was the terrain like where you were?
Hilly, mountain, well not mountains, but very tall hills, and the road going up through the valley. So you had hills either side forming mountains in the end, with the road going up through the valley.
Was there any vegetation or was it bare?
There was stuff growing, bearing in mind it was October, November, so there was still something green, trees in, etc.
Was it covered with snow?
No, that didn't come till later.
When you talk about the severe cold, exactly how cold was it? Like an English winter?
more severe than an English winter. None of us had thermometers, but it was suggested that it could have been about 28 degrees below zero as a frost. Which I was inclined to believe at the time. I think it really was that temperature. So we were wearing American equipment, American boots and parkas, and various other things the Americans had, along with our own battle dress out underneath. You know, the British uniform.
Were there any Korean civilians about?
No, I never saw any. The only time I saw Korean civilians was when we came ashore at Hung Nam. Ham Hung, or the Ham Hung, I think it is. And there were just civilians walking about there. No fighting or anything going on, no.
What impression did you get of the Korean civilians?
Well, they just kept to themselves. They didn't, you know, didn't upset us in any way, and we didn't do, you know, didn't just walk by them, sort of thing.
So they ignored you, did they?
They ignored us, and we ignored them.
What kind of condition did they seem to be in?
They seemed to be pretty well. They weren't hungry or anything like that.
What was your impression of the Americans you were fighting beside?
well, I'm afraid I haven't got a very good voice for the American troops. They didn't seem to want to fight a lot. They didn't had not had a lot of guts in them. But there again, they were headquarter section, so perhaps that had something to do with it. Most of them were postmen, I suppose. Various headquarter clerks, signalmen, all headquarter people. So, you know, they could be they didn't do a lot of fighting. We're not used to a lot of it.
How would they differ from British troops?
Well, you must know more about this than I do, but there's an entirely different attitude between a British troops and American troops. The Americans, if they've got everything, they're all right. But if they lack in anything, they just say, that's it, I can't do it, I won't do it. But the British troops will do it or try and attempt to do these things without everything at hand. So I did not particularly take to the Americans then, because of that.
You mean they were less willing to improvise?
That's correct, yes. All they wanted to do was, well, in actual fact, there was several cases where the people were actually asleep at night on this in this battle, in the various trenches and were alongside the road. Things we needed, like several people to help somebody else out, and I'd go over and find somebody, American, asleep. And with all the battle raging, they were asleep. Didn't want anything to do with it.
Were they black or white American troops?
I don't think I didn't see any black there. I don't think I saw any black on that convoy. They were white American troops.
Were you impressed with what they were equipped with?
Oh, they had everything. Everything you could imagine, from cold weather gear to everything you could think of. Plenty of food, plenty of ammunition, everything.
You were fighting under the United Nations flag. Were the symbols and flags of the United Nations much in evidence? Or
I don't know. I don't think so. We never wore anything in a way of saying we were United Nations troops or anything like that. And I never saw anything on the lorries or vehicles going up. There were no signs.
What about the other foreign troops fighting under the United Nations flag, apart from the Americans? Did you see anything of that?
Yes, I'll come to them later.
I mean, before you were in prison, did you see anything?
No, I never saw anything before we went up.
Now, can we come back to where I interrupted you, where you were actually captured with the Chinese coming amongst you? And can you tell me what the first impression of the Chinese troops made on you, what they looked like?
Well, they were small, they were poorly armed, but there were so many of them, let's put it that way, they were everywhere.
Why were they so poorly armed?
It didn't seem, well, there weren't enough, did not seem enough arms between them, all of them, you know. Some of them had arms, some of them didn't. I gather that they were short of arms at that time, from people talking about it later. And what little things they had, small mortars, etc., everything was carried. There was no transport at all. They carried everything. Mortars, bombs, everything was carried. So that was the first impression. So many of them.
Were there arms of good quality, do you think? Did you have a chance to look at them?
I did not recognise any of them, but they did not look very good. You know, looked very old arms and everything like that. Everything seemed to be old. No new material, or nothing we would use.
Did they have plenty of grenades, do you think?
They carried a lot of grenades, yes.
And what about their clothing?
Their clothing was all K-pop lined, winter gear they had on then, which made them look about twice the size they would normally look.
Do you think their clothing was more or less suitable for the conditions than
yours? Oh, very suitable to the conditions. Later on in the camps, we were issued with the same sort of uniform they wore, which was K-pop line, and it was very good for the cold weather.
And what did their attitude towards you and your comrades seem to be when you were captured?
They seemed to be very good. They didn't order you about too much. They didn't shout or anything or use bayonets or anything. They just sort of herded you up and got you out of the way. They didn't seem very bad. Not that we had any contact with them previously, so we didn't know what to expect. But they herded us away to an area where, which was in like over the hill from where we were, and we were passing one of their kitchens, which was cooking their food, and one of these big tubs contained these red beans, and another one contained, which I found out later, was called sorghum, which is a red maize. And they actually offered us some of this food, but we'd already taken as much food as we could carry from this, the burnt-out convoy, American sea rations. So we were carrying our own tins of food, which lasted a couple of days. Anyway, they offered to feed us with this stuff that they would eat. Of course, none of us accepted it. And then they marched us up to the top of the valley, the next valley. They marched at the top of the next valley, and they kept us there for a couple of days in buildings with a guard outside. And then after a couple of days, they marched us away at night through the same area that we were caught in, over the valley, and then from there on it was marching every night.
How many POWs approximately were there on this march?
I don't know. I could only guess 100 or thereabouts. I don't know.
And what proportion approximately would be British?